Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the University of Maryland's Inflammatory Bowel Disease Program, a multidisciplinary care service dedicated to relieving symptoms and improving the quality of life of IBD patients. For more information, it's 1-800-492-5538 for the University of Maryland's Inflammatory Bowel Disease Program. You can also click on their banner on the steinershow.org website. And I also remind you all that WEA, as you know, recently completed our on-air fall membership drive. We want to thank all of you for contributing to WEAA, to making this a really wonderfully powerful, successful drive, especially when there's many of you who did that. We thank you very, very much. But there's always a but. Unfortunately, we didn't make our goal. So if you missed your chance to support this great station, news and information, great music, you hear each and every day, there's still time to show your support. Join online right now at WEAA.org, and you'll be doing your part for your public radio station. Keep this place growing and on the air. And so that's, again, WEAA.org. Log on. It's a secure website. You can make your contribution there and make your pledge to WEAA. So thanks to WEAA Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. WEAA.org. Don't forget, make that pledge online. All right, we are in the house now. I don't know if he made his pledge or not, but Woody Curry is here.
Yep.
Clinical and Associate Executive Director, of the Baltimore Station. Lines are open at 410-319-8888. 410-319-8888 is the number to call here. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. So, Woody, and a lot of you who listen to this program have much in common with what we're about to talk about. There are many people who listen to this program who are veterans, men and women who might have served in Iraq War, Afghanistan, in the Gulf War, in Vietnam, in operations, as we heard from many people calling, as one brother who called who was part of the Marines in 1958 that were attacked in Lebanon when all those hundreds of Marines were killed, or not, I mean 1982 under Ronald Reagan. And so whatever that time was, we'd love to hear from you and your thoughts and ideas as this conversation unfolds. And also, there are many of you out there who have been touched by people who, in their lives, who have been strung out on drugs, stuck in places, or have been there yourself. So these lines are open to you and to everyone else at 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888. So, Woody, to start, I mean, 80% of, and your particular program is all men, of the men in your program are veterans.
75%.
75. But 80 was close. 75.
Mm-hmm. Close.
Close.
it bounces up and down.
But in all seriousness, so that we're going to see a surge of people coming back if they're, all the estimates, even by the Veterans Department, are that 30% of all the U.S. returning troops are likely to develop some mental health problems, as they're called, and 20% will have serious brain and spinal injuries. That will require not just immediate but ongoing medical care. And already VAs are overwhelmed. They can't keep up. They can't even keep the record straight.
Yep. It's the way it is all the time. I mean, I can't say all the time from personal experience, but that's been my experience all the way down the line. I mean, you know, it's just too overwhelming. People only look at the physical damage that's done as far as war is concerned, but they don't see the emotional and psychological and spiritual trauma that a person goes through. So they don't see that in the military. You don't deal with that. You know, it's not that you don't deal with it. It's that the reality of everyday events overrides a lot of considerations as far as, am I thinking okay, or is my thinking correct, or am I believing? You don't have time for a whole lot of that. You know, you have periods of time when you can reflect, but then that's the reality of what's going on around you always overrides any of that kind of stuff. So it doesn't really, it's not a salient factor, you know. The danger and survival is the factor. And see, the other thing is that you survival is instinctive. We talked about this. It doesn't operate according to reason and rationale and philosophy and anything like that. We develop these ways of describing these things that aren't really what's going on, you see. It's not really what's going on. You can politicize it. You can romanticize it. You can mythologize it. You can do whatever you want with it. But all of those are more or less after the fact. The actual experience itself is about staying alive. And when you're involved in the type of stuff that's going on in Iraq especially, maybe not so much as Afghanistan, but in Iraq, the environment is hostile. Not just certain people. The entire environment is hostile. There are IEDs hidden in dead animals laying on the side of the road. The entire environment is hostile. So you're locked and cocked 24/7. You come out of that and you go back for multiple deployments of that.
Multiple.
Yeah. And then you come back to a world with cities and people and traffic and shoppers and noise and all of that. You automatically go into that mode without even being conscious of it. Other people might notice it, but to you, it's where you're supposed to be. Is it mentally ill? No, I don't think so. I think it's more of a conditioned response.
You know, I read this thing.
Does that make sense?
It is. And I think that when we think of what of these men and women coming back from both those wars, and there's a severity about those wars in a way because of these multiple deployments, because so few men and women are affected by it, so few families, when you think of the total population, are part of this, as opposed to even Vietnam, where everybody one way or another was touched by this war, we're facing what could be a huge crisis in the sense that the government doesn't have the money nor the resources nor the willing to put it into what has to be, what they're about to face.
First of all, before any of that even comes down the pike, I think the biggest problem with all that is somebody going to have to justify it.
Justify
the whole experience. What was it about? You know, people ain't buying into that political description. I mean, that they've been got rid of that. So, I mean, what's the purpose?
Right. No, you're asking.
You know, before you start dealing with all that kind of stuff.
I mean,
the response I got 40 some years ago in Southeast Asia after some pretty traumatic events was I asked Sergeant Tate, my platoon sergeant, I said, "Hey, Sergeant Tate, look, what is all this mess about anyway?" You know what he told me?
I know he told you because he told me this story before, but you can tell the people what he told you.
Can I say it on air?
Well, you can't curse on the air.
Oh. He told me it was none of my business why we were there. Now, see, that's rational. But in the sense that he was doing and where we were coming from and what I was saying earlier, that I don't have time to be dealing with that. My business is right here, right now in front of me, and that's what I got to deal with. So his answer to me is the way we live in the field.
But in terms of coming home.
You see what I'm saying?
I do. But in terms of coming home is different in that. As many men who, mostly men, who suffered during World War II, coming back from combat, came that because it's invariable, it's going to happen no matter whether a war is well-defined or not well-defined, mm-hmm. what you experience, you're going to bring home with you mm-hmm. and inside of you. The difference was you also came home to a place where people were unified around the existence of that war.
Which one was that?
World War II.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And we haven't had a war like that in a long time, which makes it even more difficult in some ways.
Because a big war like that, nobody's going to win.
and everybody's involved.
But nobody's going to win. I don't care whether you're involved or not. And after World War II, when they dropped those bombs and stuff and everybody got armed to that degree, then there's no winner in that kind of thing. So if there's not nothing to be gained by doing it, why do it? It's that mad policy we had, you know, mutually assured destruction.
Right. Well, I guess what I'm saying is that during that war, the difference was that almost 99% of the population believed in what the war was about.
Because 99% of the population was directly affected by it.
And also believed that they were fighting for...
Yeah, that's what I meant.
...the salvation of the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. And so in...
Well, they believe the same thing now.
Well, but most people don't.
The ones that go to war trying to save their particular philosophy.
Right. But what I'm saying, the majority of Americans don't believe that. It's not just,
oh, no.
You know, in this war or in Vietnam or in Iraq or in Afghanistan.
Because we're fed a scripted version of what's going on. That's what that's about. We are given a scripted version of what's going on. You know, after Vietnam, they put this strict censorship over who says what to who and why and what's shown and everything else. So we are not really given the reality of it. That's another thing that creates a problem for people coming back. Mm-hmm. Because what I ran into was a whole lot of people's conceptualization of what they believe should be and shouldn't be. And I'm saying, does anybody even know I'm here?
Right.
That's the same thing I'm saying there. What are these people talking about?
So now we have these men and women coming back.
Mm-hmm.
And with the economic conditions that America faces today and all the budget cuts being pushed by more conservative folks in America to cut everything back, we're going this veterans crisis could be one of the deepest that we face.
Well, it's on top of everything else that's going on.
Anyway, and we're talking about men and women, some of whom are National Guardsmen, some of whom are reservists, who are not full-time soldiers, who never expected to be sent over. I mean, if you get drafted, if you join the Army in 1967, well, you know the chances are you're going to be sent to the combat zone doing something, behind the lines or on the front lines. If you join the service as a young man in the 90s and this century, you know what you're signing up for. But if you are a young man or woman or a 35 or 40-year-old man or woman who's in the National Guard or Army Reserve, you think you're going for weekend training. And to take
well, that's
care of
what
floods,
you've been told.
And to take care of riots, not to be sent to the middle of Baghdad and then come home to find you've lost your job, you lost your house, you lost your wife, husband, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So this, what I'm saying is, what we're facing now is very different, and it's a crisis. I don't think that the Veterans Administration, the government, is ready for.
I don't think anybody's ready for it. I mean, we're ready for it. Here's the deal. The way life works is it happens whether you're ready for it or not.
That's another question, yeah.
You see. So the question ain't about whether we're ready for it or not. The question is what we're going to do. Right? Really. That's what the question is.
But you already have some Iraq and Afghan vets in your program.
Sure, I got them. I got them, yeah.
I met them already. I mean, there were some young
them,
men.
I've been dealing with a bunch of them. I mean, I've been dealing with them ever since the war started. You know, it doesn't take. War been going on 10 years, right?
That's right.
Okay, so PTSD 3-4 years into back to the world starts showing up. So I've been dealing with them all along. They like the rest of them. The difference is that the environment is entirely hostile, not just certain people in the environment, like enemy soldiers or Mujahideen or whoever the devil you're fighting.
What do you mean everybody's hostile? Oh, you're talking about over there in the war?
Yeah.
You're talking about here?
Right. Cities, roads, boulevards, malls, the environment is hostile. They're coming right back to reminders of, and it's the same thing that I said about the addiction. The person experiencing PTSD is processing cues from the environment on a totally different level than most other people are. The environment to a combat veteran is threatening. certain places offer concealment. Certain places offer advantage and disadvantage. I'm looking at that and processing that and seeing which is the best way to play this on a daily basis. You know, that's what I'm trained and oriented and conditioned to do, to look at the risk value, the risk quotient in whatever it is. And that's what I'm doing. Most people walking around on a daily basis aren't thinking that kind of way. They're hypervigilance, they call it. You know?
Right.
And I'm operating like that most of the time. Still. Really. I don't mean I'm over that. I mean, I know what it is, and I know I do that, and so I find a whole lot of things to be vigilant about when they may not even require it because I see more.
So
does that make sense?
It does make sense, and I want to see what listeners think about what makes sense. 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. I'm very curious what you think about what's going to happen with these returning vets. What we're going to face in America? 45,000 people will be coming home shortly from Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
Though I think they'll be staying in Afghanistan for a while longer because they don't want to let those minerals go. But that's another show. 410-319.
Well, that's always the case.
It's always the case.
War's about real estate. It ain't about all that other stuff.
410-319-8888. Your thoughts. And also on the question of addiction and what people who suffer from post-traumatic stress and other disorders come back and face and the tolls that alcohol and drugs take. 410-319-8888 is the number here. And Doc Key in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Yeah, God bless you, Mark, and thank you for yesterday, but also an honesty of dialogue as well as what's going on here. I'm a Vietnam War veteran, and I think that we have a tendency sometimes to suggest that all veterans are the same, you know, in the sense that we've had similar or unlike experiences. But I was a Vietnam veteran. And in Vietnam, the Nang Vietnam gunfighter village, I refused to pick up a gun. You know, I refused, and when I went there, I refused to kill anybody. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I wouldn't have gone if my mother didn't have 9 children that I was going to help support. I'd have went to Canada somewhere. You know what I'm saying? So all I'm saying, because Muhammad Ali and Tommy Smith and John Carlos were my idols, and I grew up during the 60s. You know, it's just the 50s and 60s. So the point I'm making is for my brother who has a magnificent job to do, and I honor him for doing it, and I did that in the service, when I was in the service, as well as I do it as a minister. The point I'm making is this, that I think that when we talk about war and militarism, I take it to another plane, and the military justification for a military-industrial complex that touches everything. Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. talked about the impact of Vietnam on poverty at home. While we were bombing brown babies in Vietnam, we also were impacting, because of that military cause, and the justification of war, of brown and white and poor babies here in America. Same thing is true. So I think that when we talk about veterans, we need to also, and I'm sure my brother's aware of this, we need to be mindful that a whole family, community, and nation is impacted. I can't go to the Vietnam War Memorial because I remember too many people that lost even before I went to Vietnam. And so all I'm saying is that post-traumatic shock is not come through because of what happened in Vietnam or Desert Storm or those other hellish places that we tend to dehumanize people and see them as the enemy, you know. But also it is people back home being traumatized by violence, the family members who lose a family member and have to cope with that family member coming home. And so even though I talk about going to Vietnam, I think about the brothers and sisters who are here who are also traumatized by racism and violence and poverty that are traumatically lost to us. So thanks for listening to me.
Thank you so much, Ducky.
And thank you for the work you do, and my man dealing with the VA. Anything I can ever do, Reverend Ducky Napata, I'm out there, man. Peace.
Thank you, Ducky.
Thanks.
What you got to say?
About what?
What he said.
That's just the way things are.
What do you mean?
That's just how it is, okay? I understand that. I live it. I'm in it on a daily basis. That's how it is. The thing about all of that is that here's how the game works. Whether we like it or not, whether we prepared for it or not, whether we agree with it or not, this is how it is. Okay. Now, what we need to do, if we don't have any way to deal with it, we need to come up with ways to deal with it. This is how change takes place. Change is due to insufficient credibility and every doggone thing else. It creates crisis. Crisis and opportunity. You know that Chinese ideogram, the Vietnamese ideogram, crisis and opportunity are spelt the same way. So we may not know what to do with it, but I guarantee you we'll come up with something. That's called survival. It's the same thing all over. I mean, the country's going through a crisis. We don't have structures and protocols and things in place to get it done, but we're going to get it done. I guarantee you. Is it going to be easy? Uh-uh. Do we know how to do it yet? No, but we'll come up with it. I guarantee
to get
you.
What
our survival depends on
to get what done?
To care for these people coming back from the war, to assimilate them back in society. Vietnam was 40 years ago, right? Okay, everybody that served in Vietnam isn't out of the loop. You see what I'm saying? Wars are going to go on, Mark. This is what I'm saying. It's not going to stop. As long as people don't have any respect for each other and are greedy and power hungry, you're going to have wars. They've been going on for God knows how long. And the public does not respond to it unless it touches them directly. 9/11 did that, and that's what triggered off all of this other stuff, people volunteering to go to war. But people who joined the military, regardless of what their reasons are, what they don't understand is the military's purpose is to fight wars, bottom line. So if you're not seeing that, then don't go in there and then criticize it. Their mission is very plain from the jump. The purpose of our armed forces is to fight wars, okay, and to keep other people from jumping on us. That's the reality of life. Now, if you don't understand that when you go in there, don't blame the military.
Well, wait a minute. I agree and I disagree with what you just said.
How you disagree?
Okay.
You made a choice to join.
Right.
So but, now you want to impose your terms on an institution that's coming from a different perspective.
No. I think there's a difference between people join the military for lots of reasons. People don't join the military to go to war.
I understand that. What's that got to do with the military?
People join the military because they think it is their, some people think for many years thought that it was their national duty, the duty as a citizen to be part of something.
Yeah, and some people just wanted to make some money on the weekends.
And some people do want to do that too.
Mm-hmm.
But people can find many ways to make money on the weekends. They choose to do it because they think that that is an honorable way to do it.
Yeah, well, if...
And that there's a difference between saying the military goes to fight wars if it's a war that benefits and is for the nation.
Well, that's a whole nother ballgame. I'm talking about what the purpose of the military
is. But if you're inside the military and you're forced into a combat situation that you think is unethical or immoral.
Don't go.
Then you have a right to stand up whether you're inside or outside.
I'm not disputing that. That's all right with me. If that's what you want to do, go ahead. If that's the choice you make, that's why we got a military in America. So you're free to do whatever you want. But there are going to be consequences to the choices that you make. Because like I said in the first place, if you don't see that the purpose of the military is to defend the country and to fight wars, then if you join in for all these other reasons that you got, then that doesn't have anything to do with what their mission is. Find some other way to do something.
I think it also depends on the war that you fight and why you're fighting that war.
Well, it depends on whether you're aware of what's going on or not. That's the first thing.
I mean, if there are a lot of arguments about whether or not you should have fought World War II, but I think that most people would agree that
yeah, but you know things change.
But people look at wars like Iraq and these young men and women who went to fight in Iraq, these 45,000 people coming home now, and the hundreds of thousands who went before them and served four or five combat tours, that they were fighting a war that absolutely made no sense.
Makes sense or not.
No. That war.
Well, whether it was politically motivated or whether it was actual danger and necessity.
It had anything to do with defending America.
That's what you're saying. Right. See, so everybody on some level in the government and everywhere else in the pulpit and whoever else want to jump on it will write a book as to what they feel and how they think about what the devil's going on. And that's going to continue as long as there's people around. And wars are going to continue as long as there are people around.
Well, that's a safe place to say it. But
that's the way it is.
I think it's a much more a volatile and difficult question to ask than the way you're posing it.
No, I've been through the Vial Depart. You did too. I came back from Nam after that tour I did over there, them couple of tours, and came back to a country where they was assassinating anybody who didn't go along with the program, where they had Black Panthers, weathermen, students for Democratic Society. They was taking over the college. They was rioting in the streets. They was protesting the war. Now, what can
and
be
you
any
were
more
protesting the war when you came back?
What? Huh?
And you were protesting the war when you came back?
No, no, no.
Yes,
I did. I protested the treatment of the doggone GIs. But, not the war. I was talking about the men, the way
people,
they were being
and people
treated.
Like Wayne Collin and others joined the Vietnam Veterans
it
Against the War. And
it was about the way we were being treated. The war was something beyond anything that I had any control over. It was about the treatment of the veterans. That's been my focus the whole dog.
And there were tens of thousands of veterans that came back from that war who stood up in the VVAW and other places and said, no, the war's wrong. We shouldn't
be
fighting.
Yeah, but that didn't change the fact that it was going down. So I had to deal with the effects of it, not the reasons and all of that.
Well, I think that some people thought that you had to stand up. And
well, they wasn't in the space I was in at the time.
A lot of people were.
But I chose to take this route that I'm doing now.
Right.
You know, I still got to live regardless of that. You see what I'm saying? So while the philosophers and the policymakers and the politicians and everybody rationalize and justify all this doggone stuff, I got to eat.
Well, let's see what the listeners
You know
say.
What I'm
let's
saying?
Let's get back before we say this about everybody out here. 410-319-8888 is the number. We have 1 minute to break here. So I'm going to turn it over to everybody out there. Clarence, we're going to come right to your call as soon as we return from this break. On the way to the break, is it time? It is time. On the way to break, let me remind y'all that a tradition continues with the second annual WEAA Gospel Grace Benefit Concert featuring the legendary Lady Tremaine Hawkins. Mm-hmm. Also performing Ernest Pugh, Wilmington Chester Mass Choir, and the Morgan State University Choir. Sunday, October 30th, 6 p.m. at the Murphy Fine Arts Center. That's this Sunday. Is that right? It is this Sunday. Yes. Ticket information at Murphy's Box Office, Ticketmaster.com, or Ticketmaster Outlets, or you can call 410-547-SEAT. And this is presented by Morgan's MBA program and public radio WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. And we'll be right back. Clarence is up next, and behind him, Adrian in Hyattsville. So we'll come to our callers. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by Urbanite Magazine's new e-zines. It's a simple way to stay connected to the topics and events you care about most. Daily content on arts, culture, food, design, style, green living, and much more can be delivered to your inbox. Registration is available at UrbaniteBaltimore.com. We're talking about returning veterans, addiction, the nature of addiction, what we face here in America with Woody Curry, who is clinical and associate executive director of the Baltimore Station, who comes here almost every month to wrestle with some different issues. And let's go to the phones at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com, 410-319-8888. And Clarence, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon, Clarence.
The only way that I can actually explain what I see or what I've felt here is to go to the Bible, and it's like an evil beyond the devil. When you look at the 17 members of the Bush administration who wrote the document that America must be able to fight multiple small theater wars at one time, and then the way that it seemed that it was systematically that they went out to the certain parts of the country where there were the disadvantaged Detroit, economically disadvantaged areas, and targeted people who were probably already had certain attitudes, negative attitudes about society, maybe prone to violence or had been in violence. And then they stuck them in this war over there, increasing violence. And then they bring them back to what I call the Veterans Administration is totally disconnected. And there's an inherent, within the Veterans Administration, there's a negative attitude in the way that veterans are handled. So we choose to call them grenades. It's like we're creating all of these grenades walking around in the society. And I don't think that anybody here is aware of the ramifications that could happen in the future because of this. So, your guests may want to elaborate on that.
And that's an interesting point. But stay on a minute, just a second, Clarence, before you hang up. I mean, what do you want to start off? And
what about the VA being inadequate?
Is that what you want to focus on, Clarence?
Yes, the VA's ability to handle this situation is totally inadequate.
And I think I happen to agree. I mean, when you see that they've lost millions of records of people coming back from the Gulf War, they don't have the money to take care of things. They're just woefully underfunded and not prepared.
It comes back to what I said earlier, Mark. That's what we got. That's what we got right now.
But what does that mean? That's what we got.
That's what we got. You have the VA. The VA is establishing community. After Vietnam, the people who focused mainly on Vietnam veterans weren't really the VA hospital, so to speak.
No, they weren't.
It was the vet centers. Right. It was the veterans themselves that set up these centers because they knew how the veterans actually felt about the experience that they had went through. The veterans, the people who were actually involved in the conflict, not the politicians, not the lawmakers, not the community, not the citizens, but the veterans themselves. We knew what we needed to do. And some of us jumped up and set up vet centers and things like that that really became the funneling point or the ID point for identifying people coming in and referring them through the VA system and following them up on that. And so from that perspective, the VA's contracted with a lot of nonprofit community agencies in anticipation of all of this to set up centers. Part of the problem, Mark, here is that what people fail to recognize is that PTSD as such wasn't even recognized. Most of the veterans came in for like substance abuse and crime.
Right.
So the criminal justice system or the mental health system was the first point of contact. You see,
right.
So they were misidentified in the beginning. So it's just recently that we begin to start seeing PTSD in the field. Okay, we're actually beginning to start seeing it in the field and identifying it there. This is a work in progress, Mark. There is nothing perfect about something as hostile and as environmentally and personally and socially disruptive as a doggone war. When the wars happen, this is the result of that kind of stuff. Now, to sit down and try to unring a bell, okay, that's not what you need. You can look at things and see how they could be done better, but what we need to do now is start to do the things that we find that'll help these guys. One thing I find pretty helpful is that the same as the vet center, if you have a community of veterans, and a lot of them have the same shared experiences, the same fears and flashbacks and everything else, and we can all get together and sit down and talk about having these things without the fear of being labeled crazy or whatever everybody else sees, we tend to sort of get all right with each other, the same as we did in a combat situation. See, because we know what we're talking about. We've been there and done that. So we tend to use that as a therapeutic process. That's what we have downtown at the station. We have a therapeutic community where guys can just relax and learn to talk about and live through these fears and these anxiety attacks and these things that rear up in an environment that's supportive and understanding and nurturing. And that happens over a period of time.
Oh, absolutely.
So people need to be deprogrammed after that stuff. You can't just jump from that situation back into this chaotic situation that we're facing right now. There's no smooth transition. Nothing in this country is going smooth right now. Okay, so anybody that's not seeing that is being pretty unrealistic in what they're talking about. They're wanting something that's not happening right now.
But maybe part of what they're saying, I think I agree with everything you said.
Mm-hmm.
About why a community of veterans is important and the therapy communities like you run, and that's the only way things are going to get done with that people who
But they're still going to need medical care, and they're going to still need medicine in that part, and the VA does what they can do in that arena. But it's not on the VA by itself.
No, it's
that's
not.
What I'm saying.
What I'm saying is I think what Clarence was saying is part of that, though, is to enforce that, to push that, to demand that.
Well, the circumstances will do that. That's what I'm saying.
Is a political struggle.
I know.
That's what has to be, that has to be waged.
Everything that gets changed in this country is a political struggle.
Well, that's what Clarence is saying.
What he's saying. I'm down with it. But what I'm saying, I answer that the same way I answered one of my case managers. And when he came up to me before this hurricane thing and asked me what I was going to do about the hurricane, I looked at him like he was crazy. What can I do about the hurricane? The best thing I can do about the hurricane is get out of it. He said, but what about them people that caught up in it? I say, well, the hurricane will resolve that. I don't have to be out there. Anybody caught up in it will do exactly what I'm going to do. So don't ask me about that. So what I'm saying is this crisis will define the intervention that's needed. I guarantee you. That's the way it's always done.
And let me go back to what I think, just to reiterate what he's talking about is sometimes the intervention has to come from the people in this country themselves to fight for the intervention and a change. That's the only way things happen. Things don't just happen because they happen. Things happen because people organize and make
things
them happen.
Things happen when the problem becomes personal to the people in this country.
410-319-8888.
They haven't felt it yet.
410-319-8888. I think that's true.
That's what I'm saying.
Adrian in Hyattsville, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. This is Adrian in Hyattsville.
Welcome.
I live in the D.C. area.
Mm-hmm.
I was an artilleryman 8 years, disabled American vet, so I got a little bit of a different perspective because I've been around the VA and stuff. This is the thing that gets me, okay? Every weekend, a Hyatt, a DoubleTree, whatever the hotel is, they have these top-secret career expos. And you know those people are officers that were in the Navy or the Air Force or maybe Army or Marines working on some kind of high-tech electronics. And they get out and they get a fat-paying job, right? But the infantryman or whatever the case may be that really fought and gave his blood for this country and everything, they get out and they can't get a job. You know, so that's just where I'm like, you know, that's where I'm coming from, right?
Now, I hear where you're coming from exactly. I mean, that is the case.
You remember
that
when
is the case.
We went, you remember in 2005, well, was that six, when we were in Hue
in
South Vietnam, we was up in Hue. And I went out and grabbed this older guy that was riding a cyclo to take me across the bridge to the old city. And he was telling me that he fought with the Viet Cong inside. You remember this guy?
Yeah.
And he said when the North won, all of the Northern generals and everything got these nice jobs and everything else. He said he fought all of them years as a Viet Cong before the North even got into the war. He said, and when the North won, the best job he could get was pulling that cyclo up and down the street. So that seems to be how it is. Across the board, right?
But I think that, again, I'll go back to that is where organized political struggle comes in to not let that happen, to fight back
as a
collective unit. If you accept it as a cyclo driver or as anybody else in the street saying, oh, I can't do anything because they're coming after me, if you don't organize and pull it together, it's always going to come happen.
I know they up there occupying Wall Street and down the harbor and everywhere now trying to get these people that's making all this money off all this stuff to have a heart.
Not have a heart.
Yeah, I mean, that's what.
You're not going to give them a heart. You've got to take away their money.
Well, see, now that's when you're really going to have a fight.
Well,
you got one going on now as far as that. This is the way the game is, Mark. What I'm saying
But you don't
is,
have do you, to accept the game?
I don't accept it. If anybody accepted it, wouldn't change. But the thing about it, I'm saying these are times we live in.
They are. What Adrian is saying is true, though.
This is what we got to deal with. I don't have an answer. My answer is do the best you can with it and come up with some innovative ways of dealing with it.
And
that's what we're supposed to be doing anyway. We've been in a rut.
And as in terms of working with people who have addictions vis-a-vis war or anything else, that's what you're doing at the Baltimore Station.
Yeah. 410. I'm doing something about it every day in the little part that I play in it, but I don't expect.
Let's hit another caller here. 410-319-8888. Rastafari in Baltimore, you're on the air. Hello? We got you, Rastafari? Got him up? Let's go. If you're still there, we'll come back to you. Roosevelt, you're on the air.
Well, my opinion and my comment is the fact that, okay, you got these veterans coming home, and they should be taken care of with pristine service. They put their lives on the line for 10 years. And you mean to tell me that these people coming home, men and women alike, and they get this type of service for after having put their life on the line. So what does the government say about those individuals that's in the military? The VA should be a million times staffed to deal with it. And all that they're not able to deal with, every single hospital in the United States should take these veterans in and give them the proper treatment that is needed. They're underpaid, they get less respect, and they're putting their life on the line. It really irritates me, and I can't say how on the radio.
I hear you.
So, again, something needs to be done immediately. The government knew these things before it hit the stateside.
I'm sorry, Roosevelt, that's kind of broken up on your cell phone a little bit. Well, I think that's right. I mean, I think that especially when this war was started in the Bush administration and beyond, they didn't get thought to funding the Veterans Department. As a matter of fact, money was cut, not put into it. And that, to me, is a crime.
That's what happened.
Yeah, but it's still a crime. You don't
okay.
just say it happened?
All right, yeah. Ain't that what happened?
It is what happened.
Okay, now, what are we going to do about it?
You sit and don't you don't just sit, you don't accept it, and you battle it to change it.
Well, I do that all day, every day. So, you know, I mean, I understand that. I can only operate in the limited arena that I'm engaged in. I'm not chasing those political flights of fancy no more. I, you know, because the same stuff been going on ever since there's been people around. You know, and it's a work in progress. Life is about struggles and conflicts and resolving issues and wars and all. See, we live in an insulated society where don't nobody want to deal with none of that. So we pay other people to go through all that kind of mess. And then we don't feel no connection to it whatsoever. Then we sit back and say, oh, that's a damn shame. They shouldn't have did that. Who is they? They are the people that the people who are doing all this talking put in positions where they could do that kind of stuff. All right. So how did we get so disconnected from the events that's going on around us? If you want to get involved, get involved. Don't just sit around and holler they or somebody. Who are you talking about? These people that make these decisions didn't just materialize in that position. They represent a big part of the population's thinking. All right. Now,
well,
they do. Otherwise, they wouldn't be in office.
I don't know. I think.
Yes, they do. You know, there are people out there who don't believe in abortion. That's part of the population. So then somebody who wants some power will hang on to that and get them people to put him
That's
in a place where he can do something about it. So you got this diverse culture with all of these varied interests going mm-hmm. on, you see. So when you talk about they, who are you talking about?
Well, when I talk about the they.
No, I'm talking about all these people that call up and tell me about they and the government. Who is the government? It's us.
But no. The government is supposed to be us, but it's not us.
It's us if we exercise our rights.
And it's more than the right to vote.
That's my point.
And that we are disconnected, let's say, from the veterans coming home.
Well, you're disconnected with
because
everything
we've
that's
decided
going on.
That
people now wondering why they're being treated like they're being treated.
Because now we have a way.
Ain't nobody got no money.
We have now, we have a way of doing it now because we don't want to have everyone serve anything in America. So you have this small group that are paid to go into the Army or the Navy or the Marine Corps or the Air Force, whatever it is. And then you have an even larger number of people coming out of that group that are private contractors, like they will stay in Iraq and stay in these places, paid a lot of money to do the same work.
Okay.
And all of it comes down to what at this point in America, I think the elite of America and their lobbying power in Washington decide what gets paid for and what doesn't get paid
for. Well, that's what the whole game is about anyway, who gets what and why. But the thing of it is, Mark, is that that's where in the world is this not going on? That's what I want to know. Listen, we talk about the United States, but you tell me where on this planet, outside of down in Antarctica or maybe up in the North Pole somewhere, right, where is there not turmoil, disruption, reorganization, chaos, and confusion. Where in the world is this not going?
I'm not saying it doesn't go on universally. I'm saying that there are responses to it. The response one is a response that you give, which is a response of being a clinician and running a program that is a community of men who are fighting their addictions and veterans who are fighting their addictions and also fighting.
I'm trying to help them to show them how to survive all this crap.
Exactly.
Right.
And do a good job at that.
Well, I guess maybe. I try not to get. Yeah, we good. We're good at what we do. I'm going to take not the whole organization. I mean, it's not just me.
It's not just you.
It's just not just me. No. My organization supports me in ways that other people would not even understand. They behind me 100%.
And the other side is the political struggle that people have to organize.
We
wouldn't have all of what we have in this country if it wasn't for the organizing that took place on the outside politically to push things to change. That's how things change.
Well, we started out as a homeless shelter, right?
Right.
As a homeless shelter, people sleeping on cots. And in 10, 15 years' time, we're a nationally recognized treatment program, a national model, evidence-based practices, dual diagnosis, and all other kind of stuff, right? And then took another homeless shelter and did the same thing with that in 3 or 4 years' time, right? So
we do what we do. And you're ahead of the curve by realizing that what we call addiction is really a mental illness. A part of that, and not just part of this physical addiction we talk about.
You can call it whatever you want. I know what we do about it. You know, what they call it depends on who's looking at it. But we function. We work pretty good. I don't want to make us seem.
Is our caller there? Let's try it. 410-319-8888. Rastafari, you're on the air.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Interesting show. I'm calling from Baltimore City, and I have a comment. One, I'm a veteran, and I served on Desert Storm, Desert Shield, that period.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to make the comment that, one, and I'd like if you guys can discuss this, PTSD doesn't have to be defined based on being in a war zone. PTSD, there are average people that suffer from PTSD every day, post-traumatic stress disorder. It's a disorder which throws the body out of order, right? And it doesn't necessarily have to be in arm's way. That's my first comment, and you guys can take it and run with it from there, because there are people that suffer from seeing their children burned up in a fire. That's post-traumatic stress disorder. The husband or wife is abused. That's post-traumatic stress disorder. So like the gentleman said, your speaker, you know, it's who's looking at it and what they want to call it. The other comment I wanted to make, too, and this is a comment for the Vietnam veterans, and those people who served in Vietnam, and this is no disgrace to them, the soldiers that fought, because I'm a veteran too. But Vietnam was lost, and that's something that Vietnam veterans have to come to grips with. I never hear veterans from Vietnam that era talk about that they were whipped, they were outsmarted, outgunned, and their government failed them. That's something that you have to deal with first of all. You have to learn to admit that you have a problem. The United States had a problem in Vietnam going into Vietnam. And they did not have a good strategy, an exit strategy, and they lost that war. And this is why the Vietnam veterans got the treatment they did when they came back home. That's my comment.
Let me give me some time here. My
last comment is this. I'm a suffering addict, too. I'm a recovering alcoholic, okay? And I say that with the blessing, because I'm proud that I'm a suffering addict. I thank God for this disorder, this disease, okay? Because I learned to admit that I have a problem. My problem started while I was on active duty in the military, okay? And I'm receiving treatment now from the VA, and I thank God for the VA, but I thank God that I could recognize that I had a problem, addiction, right? And I needed help, and the VA has this saying where, you know, it's not cowardly to ask for help. When a veteran asks for help, the community should be
all right,
there.
Well, we only have like 4 minutes left. You said a lot, so let me let.
That's all I wanted to say. Thank you,
Rastafari.
Yeah, thank you.
First of all,
I know what you're going to start with.
What?
Vietnam.
You sat with me in Hanoi around a table full of North Vietnamese, and I told them right to the doggone face that we never lost any battles against y'all. None. Right? None. Congress and the government lost the war. They stopped providing funds for the war. And when the war was lost, there weren't any American troops over there to fight anybody. The South Vietnamese lost the war. We pulled out. The war was over. We pulled out 3 years before the war was over. So first of all, that's a mistake that most people make that they don't really understand. The other thing about all of this other stuff is it's real easy to be a Monday morning quarterback after everything is over with to see things real clear and then sound very factual in everything about it after the fact. Okay, going forward, it's not that really clear. And most people don't see that. All of this wisdom and everything they have accumulated is after the fact. And then they see everything clear. So it's easy to be a Monday morning quarterback, you know, but that's neither here nor there. I don't have a problem with that. Nobody lost any doggone war. The war just stopped. We stopped funding the war. You were there. You know that. They stopped. Congress didn't vote any more funds for
right,
the war.
Right.
Wars cost money.
Right.
So we had to pull out of there and fund the South Vietnamese in order to defend themselves. Their heart never wasn't in it in the first doggone place. If it was, we wouldn't have never been there. But that's neither here nor there. But let's get the facts straight. We didn't lose anything because we weren't even there doing any fight. That's the first part. This other stuff about the VA. Look, here's my point. All of the injustice in this world is going to exist, and it exists because of people's attitude about themselves and everybody else around them, right? Now, until people's attitude changes, this stuff is going to continue to go on, the same as it is with recovery from addiction. It's not what's going on. It's your attitude in regards to what's going on. Now, until attitudes change, you're going to continue to see this stuff. I'm a realist, and I see it all the way through from the top to bottom. And I see that it's all connected. So all of these varied points of view, I'm glad everybody's so passionate about stuff. But passion that doesn't lead to action is nothing, leads to nothing but a whole lot of frustration and anger and resentment and stuff like that. If you're so passionate about all of this, what? Do something about it. Don't just scream and holler and find fault and all of that stuff. You need to back up all of this zeal and enthusiasm with some action. Take some action.
Maybe some people are, though.
Well, that's what they need to do. That's my advice. You know what I'm saying? I could listen to people's opinions all day long, but who's going to do it? You know that story about tie the bell on the cat's tail?
Go ahead, tell the story before we go.
The cat was interfering with the mice's food expedition and everything, right? So all of the mice got together and came up with this revolutionary idea to solve the problem. They say, well, I tell you what we do. See, if we tie a bell on the cat's tail, then any time the cat moves around, we'll know where he is. They all agreed that that was a good idea. There was one problem with it. This is where the soldier comes in. Who gonna do it?
Wait, so mice have to get together and tie that knot together. Woody?
They're doers and they're spectators, Mark. I'm a doer.
Yes, you are.
You know.
Woody Curry, thank you so much, brother.
Okay, thanks for having me.
It's always good to have you.
Okay.
Woody Curry, Clinical and Associate Executive Director of Baltimore Station. And we have some other doers coming up next hour who are taking to their hands to challenge the 99% to take on America. And, well, the wisdom is, so don't go away. We'll come right back with our next hour.